Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, Luka Doncic has scored 100 points in his past 24 hours of basketball, so we kind of have to talk about how ridiculous he's been. Is anyone playing at a higher level than Luka Doncic right now? Does he have a real case? Will he make a real push for MVP? We talk about it. I also have some slight concerns around the league, and I needed some level-headed analysis, so I asked Steve some questions that are starting to bubble in the brain of mine around some teams missing some key players, some impending free agency stuff. We bounce around a little bit. After that, we have a role player draft. Steve wrote a great piece highlighting some of the most impactful role players in the league. And so we took his pool of players. We drafted our starting fives. Vote on those. We'll get there. But we drafted our starting fives. Tell us what you think. And finally, we're going to have a WNBA season, y'all. The CBA has been agreed to. It's going to be ratified shortly. We talk about some of the key details there. And some things that we're looking forward to. What is this expansion process going to look like? What is free agency going to look like? Who's going to be the big domino that shifts this upcoming free agency period? We talk about all of that and more. Have some fun with us. You won't be disappointed. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, ready to talk about some basketball. I'm ready to talk about what is going on. I'm ready to talk about everything that's hoops. Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun indeed. You know who's having fun right about right now, Steve? Luka Doncic seems to be having a whole lot of fun as he is coming off of one of the more ridiculous 24-hour stretches of basketball that I have personally seen. He scored 100 over the last like 24 hours, dude. That's not how that's supposed to work. Yeah. We are fresh off of talking about the first time that the Lakers played the Houston Rockets. And the way he was able to shut things down there, and just in general, what this Lakers stretch has been. And Luka has been a huge part of that on both ends of the floor. Like, the offensive production speaks for itself, and we're going to dig into that shortly. The defense has perked up. The effort, the attentiveness, et cetera, has perked up. And now you have the Lakers on this massive winning streak playing their best basketball of the season. But then he plays the Houston Rockets again, and it's 40. In the fourth quarter, he just didn't care who he saw. The game starts with Tari Eason doing his best. The game ends with Amen Thompson doing his best. And it's just buckets. But then the Lakers have to get out of there. They're going to Miami. They get in super late. You don't know who's going to play, who isn't going to play, just in terms of the short turnaround and things. And Luka's like, yeah, I'm fine, actually. And not only am I fine, and despite the Heat leading for that first half and for most in the early portion of the third quarter, Luka Doncic says, I've had enough. And then it's 60.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hang right there. Let's pause right there. Because here's what I want to say, right? Like, we love some X's and O's. You love some process. We love an analyzing the game. There are some times where you just kind of got to turn the brain off and be like, what's wrong with this guy? And I found myself watching the Houston game and the Miami game and asking myself, what's wrong with this guy? What's he doing? Like, why is he doing this? Well, like, it didn't matter. And so every time you do the analysis of Luka, especially early in the season, you sit here, I sit here, everyone sits here. It's like, well, he can beat all your coverages. He can make all the right plays, all the right reads. And he's also great at scoring. These last two games are the example of what happens when we say this. That's what we mean. These last two games. Because it was like, cool, two on the ball, pass, drop, pass. Well, we're going to switch. Guess what? Shot, 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 shot. Shot. Might as well be that song from whatever year that was. Luka just didn't care. Didn't matter who was in front of him. Didn't matter what the spot was. Didn't matter where, top of the key, wing, above the break, whatever. I'm going to do whatever I need to do. And also, this time of year, I would just caution crowds, leave him alone.
Don't
engage with Luka Doncic right now.
Yes!
don't poke the
Why
bear.
Why are doing this?
He's looking for a reason, and he's going to let you know over and over and over again. And it's just like, I think we have to just find an appreciation for the casual nature of his step backs and his buckets. Like, you know, how Jokic is just like, fine, I'll shoot it, it's whatever. When Luka just gets into the animation, like the three he had against Davion Mitchell was just like, hey, you want to come with me real quick? I'm going to take two dribbles and then just go right to my footwork and bop. Yeah, I made it. Could deal with me. He's ridiculous, man.
Yes, he is. Like, he is one of the more infuriating shot makers to have to guard. Because you look at him and it's just like, okay, well, he's not going to blow by me at least. But the handle is good. He's very good at getting your top foot and then attacking it. It's just like, well, darn, now he's gained an edge. It may not be the cleanest of blow bys, but he's gained an edge. And like, quiet is kept during this win streak. Like, Luka does just look healthier and burstier. So like, some of those drives that you could keep in front and then he would just make the shot anyway, because he's Luka Doncic, have now legitimately turned into like deeper paint touches. And the deeper that paint, that Luka gets into the paint, the more dangerous he becomes. Like, the shot making becomes easier for him. The foul drawing perks up even more for him. And if you so much as lean the wrong way or blink at the wrong time, as you've already alluded to, I can make literally every pass in the book, and then I can make up some to add to the closing pages. What are you supposed to do when he's in this kind of mode? And like, to the step back portion, like, one, we are how deep into Luka's basketball career at this point? Just don't let him get to the left wing. That is just his spot and has been for a very long time. If he's in rhythm, like, you just have to shade him to his right hand. Like, you're going to lose the possession anyway. Just don't. Because if he gets to step back to his left, if he skips back to the left wing in particular, the ball is going in the basket and you're not going to feel good about it. And I'm glad that you brought up the fan portion of this, because obviously in a like serious slash literal sense, we can't police what fans do. Like, don't be problematic, of course, but like, you paid your money, have your fun, heckle the road guy, whatever. The thing that we have like denigrated Luka about this year has just kind of been the focus, especially as we're talking about the defensive end. Like, you just need to be more locked in than you've been. Why, as a fan, am I helping Luka lock in? That's like the one thing you don't want him to do. I'm not about to give him a focus point to now, I'm making all these shots. If I do get a stop, which again, teams try to get him switched out, the Lakers are doing a good job of laying help behind him, but Luka is also being more proactive with his defense. He's being more physical. He's being more active with the hands. Off the ball, he's being more attentive. He's getting more of those kind of steals and kind of flying in for stuff. So, like, he is just legitimately playing better. You are now just getting the best version of Luka Doncic, Steve. It has been a joy to watch. It's also, I was joking ahead of the pod, kind of infuriating to watch. I'm watching this Heat game, and, like, poor Pelle Larsen is just doing his best, and he's just too small for Luka. And if he gets clipped with a screen, it's a switch, and it's just kind of tough. Go ahead.
Because you can insert name from a whole bunch of teams and they can have that same exact feeling. This guy's on a he's on a run here in March. And I know you have stats, but I'm going to be basic. Mm-hmm. He's averaging 37.2 points a game in the month of March. He's shooting 50% from the field, taking 25 shots a night. He's shooting 41% from three, taking 13 threes a night. Like, that's not usual behavior. He can make free throws. If he can make some free throws, he would be at 50-49. He was at 75% from the line. We won't talk about it. But he's been insane and incredible. And I want y'all to realize, he's been so good, we are once again talking about the Lakers. We just talked about the Lakers. And Luka lost his mind. And it's like, we kind of got to talk about it. I'm so sorry. But yeah, I would say, fans, if you need a Frosty, just go get one.
What a callback. Wow. You are in rare form today. Okay. Steve on the Luka run. This is impressive. Okay. I do indeed have numbers, Steve. So, again, over the last 24-ish hours of hoops, Luka Doncic has scored 100 points, 14 of 21 inside the arc. It's like two-thirds of those. 16 of 34 from three. 47% of those. That's not how to.
It's like a team's 3-point shooting line. 16 of 34. Come on, man.
Why have you made 16 threes in 24 hours? That's not how that's supposed to work in actual games, though. 16 of 34 from three, 24 of 33 from the line. You know how hard it is to get up 10 threes and 10 free throw attempts a game? In any stretch. if you're taking that many threes, generally you're not getting downhill enough to draw that many fouls. The fact that Luka has both is kind of nuts, Steve. And so, like, if that's not how that's supposed to work, to the 60-point game in particular, what I really wanted to hammer in on here, he had 60 points, 7 rebounds. He had 5 steals against the Miami Heat last night. Games of 60-plus points and 5-plus steals have only been done 5 times in NBA history. The other 4 players to do it, Rick Barry back in 1974, Michael Jordan back in 1993, Allen Iverson back in 2005, and James Harden back in 2019. Luka had a 78.2 true shooting in his 60-point game against Miami on the second night of a road back-to-back, which is insane. But that 78.2 true shooting performance is the highest of that 5-player group, the only player of that group to have a true shooting over 70 in that game. And among all 60-point games, this is regular season and playoffs, that mark is 14th of the 95 60-point games that we have recorded. You know who has the most efficient 60-point game of all time, Steve? The guy on screen, Luka Doncic. If you recall, not too long ago, when that man had 73-10-7 against the Atlanta Hawks in what was one of the more spectacular eviscerations of a defense that I have ever seen, and also one of the most infuriating times for me as a basketball fan/analyst, because the immediate hashtag discourse around that game was the Hawks are an abomination. They're playing all-star defense, and anybody could do this if you're going to play defense like this. And it angered me so much, Steve, that I did a 29-minute breakdown going through all of the shot attempts from Luka Doncic to showcase, like, one, how good that game was from Luka, and two, like, the Hawks threw out, like, 4 different coverages in multiple matchups in that game to try to stop Luka Doncic. It was just another loud example of, like, hey, y'all should probably watch the game that you're complaining about. But, like, I'm not about to do that rant all over again. But, yeah.
You kind of did. You kind of just did it a little bit. You did a little bit of it. And I had forgotten you spent 37 minutes breaking that game down until you just brought it back up. I just had gotten that out of my memory. But continue.
I was so incredibly mad. But to the 60.5 steal bit, Luka and Harden, the only guys to have that game on the road. Luka and AI were the only two to do that on the second night of a back-to-back. And again, it was a road home back-to-back for Iverson. It was just 2 straight road games for Luka, which just makes that even more insane. And also kind of popped up yesterday, and as I was looking at stuff, it popped for me again. Wilt Chamberlain, because of course it's Wilt Chamberlain, has the record for most points scored on the second night of a back-to-back with 72. Because of course, yeah, Wilt was able to do this. But naturally, Wilt lost that game. And Wilt lost that game to the Los Angeles Lakers, if you want to bring all of that full circle. So here we are, talking about Luka Doncic again and this ridiculous run he's been. So that's the last 24 hours over this win streak for the Los Angeles Lakers. 40.9 points, 60% on twos, 42% on 14.5 3-point attempts a game, 78 from the line, 10 attempts, 9 boards, 7 assists, over 2 steals per game, 30-plus in all 8 games. He is on a tear of all tears. And the question I wanted to pose to you, Steve, is less an MVP question, because that's more like overall resume type bit. And again, we just talked MVP on Tuesday, so I don't want to hammer that too long. Mm-hmm. Is anybody playing better basketball than Luka Doncic right now?
I mean, at this current moment, Friday morning, I don't have an argument if you say that, but I think the fun of basketball, the fun of today's NBA, is we have so many people that will do this night in and night out. Because we're talking about what Luka did. Victor Wembanyama was also an insane person on the same night. Bam Adebayo scored 83 points. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hit multiple game winners. Nikola Jokic has been nuts. So it's like, that should be the focus point and the fun of today's NBA, is that every single night, no matter what, you don't know what you're going to get. These players are so talented. Mm-hmm. These players are so good. I mean, we're talking about Luka. LeBron had a night where he didn't miss a shot, and the only shot he missed was because he tried to be Jeff Hardy on a drive and ran into 3 people, and they didn't call him out. Like, we are seeing insane performances night in and night out, and I think that's where it's like, okay, you should have fun talking about best in the world. You should have fun enjoying these players every single night, because you don't know what you're going to get. This is the good stuff. This is the good deal.
This is the good stuff. And like to that point, LeBron had a triple double last night. Like LeBron also played the second half of a back to back at his big age and had a triple double against his former team.
Like, hey, which also forced Austin Reeves to play. Because Austin Reeves was like, oh, you're playing? Well, I guess I can't sit up, so I will also play.
Well, I guess I don't really have an excuse if you're also doing the guys hard thing. It's just like, there are so many great performances happening, to your point. To answer my own question, like, it's a convenient timing for this when he's coming off of 100 points in 24 hours. Like, the answer kind of has to be yes. And like, yeah, I guess even if you zoom it out to March, it's like a three-man race between him, Shea, and Wemby. As you mentioned, like, what, game winner for Victor Wembanyama last night after like 18 jab steps?
If he starts acting like Dirk, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do if he figures that shot out? Come on.
This is a Luka portion. I don't want to hang here too long. But, like, watching that Wemby shot in particular, they're just letting the clock bleed, and he is just, like, look at his 18 jabs. And it's like, okay, well, let me just take two dribbles and fade to my right because I know you're not going to come close to contesting this shot. And the ball just effortlessly goes through the net. And it's just like, okay, man. Like, they tried to send a double on the drive. It just didn't matter. He was into the gather before it actually got there. And once you rise up, like, that's 7'4" with an 8-foot wingspan. What you supposed to do with that?
Look, man, real quick, basketball evolution is crazy. Because everyone made fun of Giannis for the shots. And then he started making them. They won a championship because you couldn't do anything with them. We had Dirk who did this on a nightly basis. We saw Kristaps Porzingis. I was like, ooh, if he just figures that shot out, there's not much you can do with him. You know, went up and down. It is what it is. If Wimby's able to just kind of be, I'm getting to my spot, good luck, guy, what are you prepared to do about that? He won't see you.
he sure won't, dog. It's deeply unfortunate for defenses trying to deal with Victor Wembanyama. We talk about best in the world. Like, I think Luka is just operating at a higher plane than anyone as of this current moment. Now, what that means for the actual MVP race is going to be a different conversation because he has been incredibly good this year, to be clear. Shea has just put all this together despite the injuries, also has best record in the league. He's had plenty of two-way sequences as well. So, like, Shea would still be my MVP front runner. But Luka is very loudly putting himself even more into this MVP picture, and he deserves praise for that. And just in terms of who is just playing the best basketball, if you are telling me Luka is going to be a neutral and at times like a slight or legitimate positive defensively, while also being a top three playmaker on earth, a top three scorer on earth, and he's flame throwing from three, it's hard to eclipse that. It's really hard to eclipse that level of play. Last thing I wanted hit on, Steve, on the stat front.
Go ahead. Hit your last thing because this is so much joy. And I know my podcast co-host, I know you have a level of concern about several things that are happening around the NBA. We have to rapid fire those. So what's your last
point? Okay. I just wanted to once again hammer home how ridiculous this 24-hour stretch was for Luka. Because we've kind of talked about he's done a little bit of everything. He's been efficient everywhere. Just quickly on the play type portion. He's received 77 on-ball screens, so talking pick-and-roll stuff with Luka Doncic. No, he can defeat any coverage. 1.31 points per possession on any trip featuring a Luka pick-and-roll against the Houston Rockets, elite defense, Miami Heat, elite defense. 23 drives across those two games, 1.4 points per possession on any trip featuring a Luka drive against those two defenses. 30 isolations for Luka Doncic across those two games, 1.6 points per possession on those trips against two elite defenses. Insane what he's been able to do. And if you want deeper Luka/Laker thoughts, check out our episode on Tuesday, as we spent quite a bit of time talking about more of the particulars of the team-wide thing. But Luka warranted another conversation because he's been insane. Now, as you alluded to, Steve, you are absolutely right. I do have some rapid-ish fire questions for you about some things across the league. while we're here, while we're getting closer to April, like the regular season has really flown. I hope people have enjoyed all the basketball that we've seen because we're getting to the playoff time now. So if you spent your time arguing over nonsense, it's kind of unfortunate for you. But anyway, just some quick questions in light of some news and things, Steve. So Cade Cunningham, okay, who's also factoring pretty heavily into the MVP conversation, he's going to be out for a while with a collapsed lung. So first and foremost, get well soon, Cade Cunningham. That is scary. Hopefully he is not out long, but more importantly, hopefully it's just a full recovery, whether he is back in a week and a half or he's back in a month. Get that all the way right. Steve, we've talked about the Pistons and we've talked about the Celtics and we've talked about the Knicks. The Pistons still have the one seed. They're going to have to navigate a stretch here without Cade Cunningham. Very quickly on that front, Steve, the next five games or next six games, rather, for the Detroit Pistons, they have the Golden State Warriors later on tonight at home. They have the Los Angeles Lakers on Monday. And we just talked about what Luka Doncic is doing and what LeBron James is doing, what the Lakers are doing overall. The Atlanta Hawks, who just will not stop winning, Steve. And as such, the Atlanta Hawks, now the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, by the way. But they got the Atlanta Hawks also at home. The New Orleans Pelicans, who also can't stop winning. We'll leave that there for now. And then you go on the road against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are currently without Anthony Edwards. We'll get there. And against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So that's their next six games here. Are you concerned at all about the Detroit Pistons navigating this stretch without Cade Cunningham and their standing as the number one seed in the East?
The Atlanta Hawks, what do we have here? I think for me, when it comes to Detroit, the thing for me is they actually built that stretch early in the season, if you remember, with a lot of people out. And Kay was out for a few of those games. And so Detroit has their identity and they can lean on that. And they play with such a high compete level in the regular season. You could see where defense and drives is able to kind of make sure they navigate things. You want Kay to get healthy. That's the number one thing. But I think because they know who they are and guys have stepped up and played their role and exceeded their expectations, and it's just more of, okay, you're going to get more minutes, so continue to do what you do. I don't have the highest of concern levels when it comes to, oh, they're just going to fall apart, because this team has shown it doesn't really matter who's in the lineup for most of the time. Like, losing Kay is huge. You miss your engine. Like, I won't dispute that, but they are just going to have to figure out how to move the ball. You know, have more effort. You can't lean on Cade. Defend your tails off, and let's get after it. And so that's where it's like, for me, I don't necessarily see Detroit falling off the face of the earth because Cade Cunningham's not in the lineup. They know who they are too well.
Yeah, I think to your point, like, the defense has been so strong all year long, almost independent of who's been out there. Like, it's been a real collective effort of, these are principles you talk quite a bit about this year and even last year as they were really establishing this. Hey, we're going to put our paws on you. We're going to be super physical. You're not going to have a good time. Going to crash the glass. Like, this is how we can win the possession battle. So, like, they do still have enough of that. And the on-off numbers were, if you're watching on YouTube, the on-off numbers were on screen. And so it's similar to the Shea bit, to where the Pistons win their minutes when Cade is not on the floor, but they just become an elite squad when Cade's there. He just amplifies them to that level. It is a positive that they have won their minutes without him. And a lot of that has been because the offense drops, but that defense also gets a little bit stingier. Again, some of that is opponent three-point shooting. They can get a little lucky and things, but overall, they just have such a deep cast of defenders. They should be able to be in range. They get enough shot creation. They should be okay. So what test your... Just wanted to get your temperature on that front, especially in light of the schedule coming up. They did beat the Wizards last night. They were able to beat the Wizards in the game before that when Kate suffered the injury early on, but it's going to ramp up a little bit. So wanted to get the thoughts there. Do you make anything of, actually, before we move off the Pistons, more conversation naturally around the 65 games played minimum now? Does this reinforce your point that you just the immediate laughter is killing.
I told y'all years ago, I told you specifically, I told all of y'all, we don't need to do this, man. We can just use our noggins. We can just vote for who has done a great job. We don't need to put these rules on this thing, because what's going to happen when a whole bunch of people get eliminated and now you have to just deal with it? And look at where we're at. Look at where we're at.
I see.
Nikias, look at where we're at. And now everyone wants to go, oh, this rule shouldn't be here. I told y'all. I'm killing you.
I just wanted you to have that. That's what, because we were very much on opposite Thank sides you. Of this. Where very I was
much.
Like, I
very much.
Yeah. So I was like, I do this anyway, but like, I don't think it's inherently bad to have like a line to kind of establish that. Now, we had the appearance on what, Yahoo Sports Daily. We talked about it, and I was like, well, I'm still in favor of the rule as a concept, but like, I'm fine hearing out, let's set 65 for MVP or let's set 65 for all NBA first team and then soften it beyond below that. So like, I feel like there is a middle ground that you can find with it. But in light of the conversation around the rule, I would not be surprised if like we just, it's just gone. If not next year, then in the near future. So we will see what happens on that front. But wanted to get your thoughts, see where you were, let you get your victory lap in very quickly. You did, there it is.
Get it banned.
On the bye.
Well, now you got me ticked off.
Okay. Speaking of ticked off, the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo seem to not be on the same page. Giannis currently out. The Bucks reportedly want to shut him down. And Giannis is like, well, no, I would like to play basketball. Does any of that move you at all?
No, who could have seen this? Who could have seen this coming? Milwaukee saying, boy, this year hasn't gone great. We sure might not want to do things. And Giannis being a competitor. Who could have seen this coming? What's next? What's the next question? I'm not moved.
Fair enough. I guess for me, it's more like, does this point this more in the direction of once we get into the offseason, this is actually going to be the end of this era? I guess it's kind of what I'm looking at here. Like that, it feels unfortunate. To your point, this is a very obvious point of friction because Giannis always wants to play. Why would he not want to play as a competitor and also very good at basketball? But we'll see. Cade's out for the Pistons. Anthony Edwards also out for the Minnesota Timberwolves right now. Though they have won since Ed's been out. Matter of fact, we got to do a strategy stream for Wolves Suns. And that was a heck of a basketball game there. Do you have any level of concern about the Wolves navigating this stretch without Anthony Edwards for however long he's out?
I mean, it's not awesome in the Western Conference when you're trying to navigate, hey, we need to win to get seeding. But I think with me, there's always an opportunity when there's an injury. So you obviously want Anthony Edwards to get better. He's been the engine. But now for Minnesota, we cannot lean on Anthony Edwards as far as him being the playmaker, him being the isolation scorer, him being the pick and roll player. We have to move the ball. We have to have a little bit more movement. So there's going to be more room for Jaden McDaniels, Dante, Ayo Dosunmu, Bones Highland to make plays. But we got to be more decisive. And I think this is a good stretch where we can get more movement offensively. We can get a little bit more tempo in the half court. Julius Randle, you can get a little bit more involved in a little bit more natural way for us. And it's going to give you a chance to be more decisive and make quicker decisions, which I think is the best version of Julius Randle. When he makes quick decisions and he just goes out there and plays and he's decisive, hey, that's a different guy. And because Ant's out, he may get some more touches, may be moved around the board a little bit more, and he may feel a little bit more comfortable. Okay, I can get off of it quick because I know it's going to come back to me. So if you have this stretch where we get more movement offensively, we get Julius Randle right, we recommit to the defensive end of the floor because we don't have our security blanket of Anthony Edwards, we can fix a lot of the little things that have been inconsistent and then blend it back when Anthony Edwards comes back and kind of be a problem come playoff time. That's the hope, the hopium, the copium, whatever word you want to use. But I think that is what the idea would be if you're Minnesota.
Okay, the hopium and also the copium. I like that from you, Steve. I think, to your point, thing I want to have wrong, like getting back to the commitment of defense, like that's going to be the big thing there. Chris Finch was actually asked about some of the on-off data concerning Anthony Edwards and that they have not only won their minutes, they've been slightly better in with him off the floor, and that has largely been because the defensive rating drops, or like technically drops, but it becomes much better with him on the floor. And he didn't run away from that. It's like, yeah, I've seen the numbers on that. Like, I would tend to agree with them. Like, I think as good as Ant can be on that end, like, the effort kind of waxes and wanes, so we'll see. They can lean on that defense, get Randle in tow, and we got to see a good bit of that against Phoenix. They should be okay. Last one for me, Steve. We talked about Houston a little bit within the Lakers segment on Tuesday and their late-game offense and them ultimately needing the reps. Do you think that the reps are actually going to turn into a positive for them come playoff time, or are they running out of time to actually figure this out?
Well, you asked me about the Rockets. He asked me about the Rockets. So every Wednesday I have to watch a show where they talk about the Billie Eilish boomerang idol. And now I have to talk about the Rockets late game offense and their process. And I feel like I'm about to snap. What I will say about the Houston Rockets is the rep, like, you have to kind of go through adversity and failure before you can find success. And I think things get clouded. I think the Rockets are one of the top teams that you can point to where, and it happens every year, there's always a team where, okay, fan base, whatever, whoever it is, decides this is the problem, this is what they can't do, and we view this team through that specific narrative and we miss the rest of the issues or the rest of what could open up or the rest of what they can do. There's the Rocket team, Kevin Durant, Alperen Şengün, two-man game is very good. Teams decide, hey, we want to switch. We're not going to put two on the ball. When they put two on the ball, it opens things up. They're able to kind of have pocket pass. They get the ball moving. We're good. When they switch, is Alperen Şengün making teams pay? Is Kevin Durant making teams pay? If they double Kevin Durant, do we know where the outlet is? Are we making the right reads? Are we making the right passes? You have to experience failure before you can have success. And this might just be me, Nikias, because I was in Memphis. We didn't have shooters. So you had to just figure out, okay, how are we going to find a way to get a bucket? And like, you can't just be like, oh, it has to be a perfect world. No, we need to score. And if we don't score, we are going to lose. And I think for Houston, you have to absorb this stretch and balance it with the success you've had. We've seen them make the right reads and make the right plays. Can you go small? Can you get Alperen Şengün right? Can you get the right closing lineup? Can you poke at teams as they try and do different things? Find counters when KD gets doubled. Because I think the thing that people are not talking about is the Lakers were very savvy in that two-game stretch. Game one, no Alperen Şengün. Haha, buddy. Switch double. What are you going to do about it? You guys know what the flash is. You guys aren't ready for that. Whatever. Alperen Şengün comes back. Haha. Guess what, KD? Anytime you want to drive, there's going to be help. There's going to be late help. It's going to be early help. You're not necessarily sure what's going to come from. You don't have an automatic. And I think for Houston, it's a growth process. We continue to treat this Houston Rockets team like they are a proven product, a machine of five consecutive years of winning, and they are not that. Last year, they were a team who did not have someone who could get two on the ball. And when Golden State decided, hey, Jalen Green, we will put two on the ball, fun for Jalen Green or the Houston Rockets. So how much experience do they actually have with dealing with that kind of pressure and being able to make a defense pay? I ask myself that question all the time. So let it happen. This is like, I know Kevin Durant is there. I know you've technically accelerated things. You've won how many games in the last 3 years after winning how many games in the last 5 years before that? You have to figure out what your struggle is before you can know where to go as far as what you need to add to your team. Let it happen. All of you, please.
Let it happen. Okay, there we go. Well said. Also, Tari Eason has made 1 3 in the month of March after shooting the leather off the ball for most of the season. I just want him to snap that streak. It's just odd to see, in addition to like the Luka stretch over the last two games. But, oh boy, there we go. We're going to take a break here. And when we return, we're going to have some fun, Steve. You wrote a tremendous article highlighting some of the best role players in the league, contributing to really good teams. And we're going to have a draft based on that article. So stay tuned. We're going to have some fun. We'll be right back. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. And Steve, we're going to have a fun time with a role player draft based on the awesome article that you wrote for Yahoo Sports. So check that out if you haven't already, where Steve highlighted some of his favorite role players, some of the most impactful role players in the NBA this season. The question I wanted to ask you, Steve, was how did you decide, like, what was kind of like your personal cutoff to like who's a role player versus like who is high impact guy that may have graduated out of that class? Or did you think, how did you kind of come up with your list of guys?
I mean, I think for me, one, it's hard to quantify exactly who is in the role player discussion to a degree. You got high impact prospects, you got scorers. And so I think it's a little outdated to a degree. But for me, it's like, okay, who are the people that are the kind of the fabric of their team to where people may not understand just how important they are to this team and understanding how they help their team win on a nightly basis and the versatility that they possess to do different things. And so I think like if you score X amount, doesn't mean you're not a role player, but you kind of have your specific lane, your specific role. And for me, it's kind of trying to figure out how do we define these players? Because they aren't just that role. They're talented players who can do more, but they have an understanding, the self-awareness to, okay, I need to do this for my team every single night. I need to sacrifice a little bit, but I still have the self-belief, the skill to kind of put things together in a different way that makes me, that separates me from other people. It's where I'm having an impact every single night for this team. Even if it feels like I defer, maybe you don't, you're talking about other people on my team. You have to realize how important I am. So for me, it's like Derek White. Everyone wants to use advanced metrics to be like, he's a top five player. And then people want to look at his bot score and say, well, he's shooting this. And that's not what Derek White is. He's a night in, night out, like defensive menace who takes care of the ball every single night offensively, doesn't turn it over. And he does whatever is needed to do for the Boston Celtics to win. Like Josh Hart, every spring, it's like, well, why is Josh Hart starting? Because he's kind of he's the force behind the Knicks as far as defensively getting them to a compete level, can guard anyone, will do anything on the weak side. And then offensively, whatever you need me to do, I'm going to get it done. Jaden McDaniels, a force for the Wolves. His versatility, and when he makes it simple and plays hard, it's different. Al Caruso, we know he's championship quality. Same thing for Marcus Smart. So for me, it was just like trying to understand the impactful players that do things that I don't know if we can measure. Which it gets really interesting in today's day and age of we can measure everything. So that's kind of where my mind was at.
Okay. I like it. Because I was like looking at reading the article, and it was a great one, so you should check it out. And I was just like, I wanted to ask you that question because, you know, Josh Hart fills a role, does a little bit of everything. And I was like, okay, how did Steve decide to go with Josh Hart versus OG Anunoby, who is like also not the star level guy for the New York Knicks? You're looking at Jalen Brunson, Crosby Towns, but also does like some of that gap filling. So I was just trying to figure like where you kind of let your line, but what you said makes a ton of sense. And so I wanted to get that out of the way first. And now, based on these are the five players that Steve highlighted, and then he listed eight more in the article. Again, check it out and read it. And we're going to draft from this pool of 13. We're going to draft a starting five from the 13 names mentioned in Steve's piece. Those names are, as you see on the graphic, if you're watching on YouTube, Derek White, Josh Hart, Jaden McDaniels, Alex Caruso, Marcus Smart. And the other eight, we have Tim Hardaway Jr., Sam Merrill, Ron Holland, Julian Champagny, Dean Wade, Carter Bryant, Spencer Jones, and Isaiah Stewart. Which, what a fascinating cast of characters you have here. And Steve has been gracious enough to give me the first pick, and I am already in a headlock. Because as I look at how the positions are split, there is scarcity somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, well, no. It's like, I look at this like, I feel like I know who the best player in this group is. But it's also like, positional scarcity as I build out this roster can get kind of hazy.
Now, while you think, I will say a lot of this list was, these players are impacting these teams that are really making a push right now. Like, I know you probably have a list of 18 people that I may have missed, but like, this is like, okay, these are the teams that are making a push for a title. Let's explain exactly what these guys do to help this team every single night.
No, I think that makes sense. Like, Boy, does it. Okay, well, I guess I am going to bite the bullet. I am going to go Derek White with the first pick. I can't move past best guy on the board. Kenny Atkinson called a guy a top five player. It's not just the calculator guys that are doing this. But no, in all seriousness, his ability to do a little bit of everything on both ends of the floor, take on tough on-ball assignments, flies around off-ball, one of, if not the best, rim-protecting guard we have in the league today, which provides immense surplus value for a Boston defense that is elite still this year. Offensively, playmaking, you mentioned the turnover bit. The shooting efficiency hasn't been where you want it to be, but he makes up with that random offensive rebounding, the drive still hit, the playmaking off of those drive still hits, the screening on and off the ball still impactful. I kind of got to go Derek White with pick number one.
Got to love the rear view contest. Now, what I will say, I'm going to peel the curtain back for the dunkers and everyone here. I handed Nekias number one pick because, of course, I did. Well, it is what it is. And I knew that he was going to take Derek White. And this man right here tried to act like he wasn't going to take Derek White number one. I did know. What do you mean?
You did. There is serious consideration for a guy that's number two on my board, who probably just is not going to be there at this point. But either way, it's your selection, Steve. Who you got?
I'm going to shock you. I'm going to go Josh Hart.
Oh.
Give me Josh Hart. Yeah. Okay. I know you're expecting Caruso. Give me Josh Hart. Here's the thing about Josh Hart, right? I think you got to, when you're talking about, especially because there's a lack of bigs here, he could be used as a screener, and he can do multiple things offensively and defensively. So you can space the floor. He can be a dribble handoff hub. He can drive and attack and get downhill. You know what he's going to do defensively as far as pressuring the basketball, and you know what he's going to do as far as being on the weak side. But when he has those nights when he's scoring, he has the confidence. Like, do you remember when he just, like, showed up in Portland and was like, I'll just be a scorer for 3 weeks? Yes. The talented basketball player. So I'm going to take Josh Hart here and continue to build around that, because I know what I'm getting every night on both ends of the floor, and I know that he's going to make the right reads 90% of the time. So I'm good to go there.
Okay. That does genuinely shock me. And so I am going to go for positional value with my second pick, and I am going to select Isaiah Stewart. Elite screener, elite interior defender. They can also switch out on the perimeter if you need him to. Per NBA.com, of the 63 players that average at least 4 shots defended per game at the rim, his 43.2% allowed is not only number one on that list, it's number one by 5 percentage points. If he played enough games and if he logged enough minutes with 20 plus minutes, like, I think he would be a pretty easy all defense selection. I ultimately don't think he's going to get there. And certainly him getting himself suspended and things certainly doesn't help the cause for him. But if you're telling me, hey, here's a big that will screen and get my guards open on and off the ball, unlock some off-ball stuff if necessary, can step out and knock down a 3 on occasion, and defensively can just execute whatever coverage I need him to, and ultimately locks down the paint for me, like, I am fine with him and Derek White just kind of being the linchpins of what is going to be an insane defense. And so I go Isaiah Stewart with my second pick.
Perfect. I know who you're going with your next pick, so that's why I'm taking Alex Caruso. Give me Alex Caruso.
Okay.
Give me defensive. I can guard anyone. I will guard anyone. It does not matter what happens. I'm going to be all over the place. Weak side, you don't want me there helping and roaming. Whatever your action you think it's going to be, I'm going to make it a switch or make it tough. And then I'm going to go ahead and have some timely cuts on the other end. I'm going to attack and transition. I can finish. I can screen. I can roll. I can cut. Yeah. Give me Alex Caruso. We're playing winning basketball over here, Nekias. So, yeah, hey, you want to run pick and roll? I can make the right read. I can make the right pass. Score. But I'm going to defend. I'm going to clamp. I'm going to guard everyone. So, yeah.
Okay. Me. Hey, listen. I respect this. And this is where it gets tough, because I think for me, with the guys that are left, there is a very clear, this is the best guy on the board. But I am also trying to build, like, a functional lineup here.
Nah, go ahead. Go into your instincts, buddy.
You know what? I think I am. Yeah, there are enough defenders on the board. I'm going to go with my instincts here. I'm taking Julian Champagny with my next pick. I want guy at the four that's going to be an unabashed bomber from three, can also get busy on the offensive glass, has quietly perked up as a driver and as a ball mover, and defensively has held his own across multiple positions this year. Not going to make the all-defense argument for him, especially when he has that guy behind him at center. But Julian Champagny having one of the more underrated seasons in basketball. And if I'm building out this roster, I need a volume three-point guy that isn't going to be like a sieve on defense, or at the very least that has some positional size. And so that's why I'm looking at some of the other guys on the board that you could argue better as pure shooters. But then I have some size concerns defensively. And there are enough other guys on the board that I like that if you take the guy that I think you're going to take, I'll still feel pretty good about the wing room. And if you don't take him, then I'm just snagging him. They're feeling really good about my team. So we're going to get Julian Champagne off the board right here, Steve.
Oh, I'm stunned. I'm stunned. I went into this thinking there were two people I would not be able to have on my team. Give me Jaden McDaniels. What's going on here? What happened? How did I get Jaden McDaniels third? This doesn't make any sense. That guy is when he keeps it simple offensively, part of the fun of his growth has been, yeah, I can get more of these dribble handoffs. I can get to the drive. I have these long strides. And you don't know if it's going to be a finish, a layup, a kick, or a dunk. And so his ability to just attack and transition, his growth in the half court when he makes the simple play, and then defensively, the guy just when he – do you think he's beat? He shows his hands. He takes up space. He can guard multiple matchups. Yeah, give me that. Give me that. Sign me up for that. I'll take it. Wow.
I like it.
Stunned.
The genuine shock from Steve. Yeah, we're thinking about building this thing out in a holistic way. We got the best guy on the board. We're going to be possession maxing on this group. We're going to be shot profile what? Maxing on this group. Yeah, my team is mogging yours, Steve. Okay. I'll see.
What? What are these words you just said to me? What is this?
you're not a fan of okay. But anyway. Oh, interesting decisions to be made to close this thing out. So I got my volume 3-point guy. I have my interior big. I have Derek White. So I'm feeling pretty good about this. I do kind of want a secondary creator or more of a secondary creator here. We are scarce on that front. Let's go movement guy. Let's actually get Sam Merrill in the building. We got enough of his infrastructure around him. Okay. We have yet another shooter on the board we can run some stuff for. Cleveland's asked him to switch some. They've asked him to show and recover some. And like those reps haven't looked bad to me this year. And if I have enough around him defensively, I'm going to feel pretty good. We'll go Sam Merrill. Bolster the offense a little bit. Shoot the leather off the ball. Get it off movement if you need to. Spot up threat for us. First screener and double drag. We'll have some fun with Sam Merrill.
Okay. I will take another small that can act like a big. Give me Marcus Smart.
There we go.
Give me Marcus Smart. He can guard anyone you want him to. Doesn't need the ball in his hands. Can make the right read when he drives on a team. If he's able to kick, it opens things up. So, yeah, I'm going to take the championship level quality of Marcus Smart and what he brings to the table every single night. So, you know, drive kick, drive pass, defend everyone. Yeah, we'll take Marcus Smart. We're going to do that. Okay. I got craft and skill on my team.
I respect it. And so to recap, I have Derek White. We got Sam Merrill right now. We have Julian Champagne and we have Isaiah Stewart. And so I could size up some, have a big guy, kind of 3-4. I can go smaller if I want to and have Julian as my 4 if I need to. Got some places to go here. Got some optionality. I kind of want to go. I kind of want to go. I'm torn between Dean Wade and Ron Holland. The drives, but then there's the shooting for Holland with Dean. I'm going to go Dean Wade to close this out. 36% from 3 so far this year. Gives me more positional size. We can be super switchable if we need to. Wade has taken on some tough guard assignments at times with Cleveland dealing with injuries. So there's a level of defensive versatility here. Offensively, the screening, the cutting in particular is going to be impactful with this group. The offensive rebounding, I think, is also going to pop with this group. Yeah, we'll close things out with Dean Wade. I think we like where we're at. Who's your final selection, Steve?
Ron Holland.
Go ahead and get the dog. Give me the chaos.
Let's compete. We got some dogs over here. You want to defend? Yes. You want to drive? Yes. Let's go. Give me my 5. I feel great about this.
Okay. You feel okay to get your 5. All right. So for the people at home, give us your starting 5.
Marcus Smart, Alex Caruso, Jaden McDaniels, and Ron Holland. I did not expect to get four of my top five on my team. Thanks, guys. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, listen, you are very welcome. You are so incredibly welcome. And so for me, my starting five, Derek White, Sam Merrill, Julian Champagny, Dean Wade, and Isaiah Stewart. So if you are listening, if you're watching along on YouTube in particular, drop those comments. Tell us who won. Might need to put a poll out. Maybe I'll do that, Steve, over the weekend. I'll put a poll out on the Dunker Spot Twitter account. Have that going through Tuesday morning. We'll let the people vote on our starting five. So list it out on the tweet. And we'll see who wins. We'll announce the winner on Tuesday. You can leave your comments in the YouTube, of course. I think that's how we'll do it. Like, I like what my five is. I like.
Sounds like it's time for a 2K sim, buddy.
It might be time for a 2K sim. I'm not going to hold you. I was thinking about that. That'd be a fun time. We'll see what happens. Set the minutes, make sure nobody else plays. What was it, Sienna, that played their starting five, all 40?
Oh, my gosh. I would be so mad if I was on the bench.
Hashtag hand him a water. That's crazy. Okay. Can I shout out some guys very quickly? And so just some guys I want to say the names of on this here podcast. Ty Jerome, who I understand if you're not watching the Memphis Grizzlies because they, you know, no Ja, they traded Jaren Jackson Jr., Des Bains in Orlando, et cetera, bad record, whatever. Ty Jerome is just quietly having one of the best offensive seasons in basketball right now, or has been since he's been back. 20 points a game, 6 assists, barely turned the ball over, 54% on twos. You need to watch the shots that he's taking. 43% on threes with very high volume. He's just been kind of nuts. I implore you to watch, if you watch Grizzlies Nuggets, you got to see a little bit of the Ty Jerome show. But either way, like, the numbers are very good. The efficiency is nuts. But, like, watch what he's actually doing on ball. Like, the passes are still flashy. The drive still has spunk to him. He's getting into all kinds of off-the-dribble goodness. Inside the arc and outside the arc. He's been crazy. He has bounced back well from what that playoff series was that we are not going to talk about here on this podcast. Second guy I want to shout out, Cason Wallace. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Doesn't sound too loud. 2 steals a game does sound loud. I think he's an all-defense candidate pretty easily. Can toss him on your best perimeter guy if you need him to. If you toss him on your second best perimeter guy, it's kind of unfair. He can just take the ball from you. We are fresh off of Cason Wallace. Literally just catching a crossover in midair and still getting it going the other way. Like, he's been insane on the ball. You throw a pass near him, he's picking it off. He's been one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball. I want to shout him out. Asar Thompson, who may just be the best perimeter defender in basketball right now. Well, we asked that with the great Ku Cahill when we had him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago doing the Pistons deep dive. Check that out if you haven't already. Quick stat I want to toss your way, Steve. There have been 80 players that have defended at least 500 pick and rolls as the pick and roll ball handler defender. Asar Thompson's 0.79 points per possession mark is pretty easily first in the NBA. And again, this isn't him just guarding like number twos or number threes to kind of juice those numbers. He's been insane on and off the ball. The rim protection pops for him as well when he's off the ball. He's fun. He deserves a shout. Matas Buzelis is a guy I want to shout out on Tuesday. We ultimately ran out of time just very quietly in Chicago. The drives continue to hit. The weak side goodness defensively continues to hit. The drives feel a little bit more impactful. He is shooting the ball and shooting the ball with volume. He's around 36% from three this year. In the calendar year 2026, he's been even better. The comfort growing there, if he legit becomes a guy that you can't just like put bigs on or ignore from the corners, that opens up more of the drives. The passing quietly getting better, still not at high volume, but that's getting better. I want to shout out Matas Buzelis. Good things are happening with him in Chicago. And Nemias Keita, who's going to be in the most improved player conversation, what he's been able to do on both ends of the floor as a screener, as a finisher, as an offensive rebounder. Defensively, he's not. That's crazy. The rim protection has been very good. The incredibly deep drop that Boston has him in has been effective. It also helps to have a guy like Derek White at the point of attack navigating screens for you. But Nemias Keita has done a really good job. He has solidified a center position and a center room that a lot of people had questions about with the Boston Celtics heading into the year. He's been incredibly good. Wanted to give him a shout. And then there are bigger names, Stephon Castle, Aaron Gordon, OG Anunoby talked about a little bit earlier, Isaiah Hartenstein. Like, we got guys, but I want to shout out those five in particular. Shout out to them. And with that, we can take yet another break. And when we return, Steve, we finally got the WNBA CBA agreed to. Term sheet still has to officially be signed, but we are indeed having a WNBA season and we're having it on time. Going to talk about some of the key nuggets and just in general, just talk about what we've learned so far, how excited we are about this upcoming season. We'll be right back. We are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot, and Steve, it's time to do some WCBA talk, complimentary this time, because lo and behold, not long after we finish recording on Tuesday, we wait, there's more marathon negotiating happening. I eventually go to bed after an awesome night of hoops. I wake up and I see plenty of notifications at like around 2 a.m. or so that the Players Association, they've agreed to a deal. And it still has to be ratified over the coming weeks. But ultimately, we got a new CBA. 7-year deal with an opt-out after the 6th year. Money's going up. And just in terms of some of the key things that have come out in terms of details so far, again, CBA has to be ratified. Once that's voted on by the players and the Board of Governors, then it's official. And then we really get into the nitty-gritty of the schedule. But expect to be a 7-year deal with a 6-year opt-out. The expected salary cap for this upcoming season, $7 million. Last year's salary cap was a little over 1.5. That is a massive, massive, massive jump. And I'm so excited that these players are getting paid closer to what they're actually worth. Supermax salary for this upcoming season, slated to be around $1.4 million. That is up from $249,000 last year. Kelsey Mitchell was the highest paid player in the league last year. Made a little over $249,000, and that's after getting a timeout bonus to update her own max, and that's how she ultimately got to like $269,000, somewhere in that range. That being the max, and Kelsey Mitchell technically being the highest paid player in the W last season, at about $269,000 last year, the minimum salary for this upcoming year is going to be around $270,000. The minimum eclipsing the highest paid salary slot last year is insane complimentary. But within the vet minimums and things, like, we do have tiering heading up this year. So for rookies, the minimum is going to be $270,000. For players with 1 to 3 years of service, that's going to be $277,500. Players with 4 to 6 years of years of service, $285,000. If you play between 7 to 9 years in the league, that's $292,000, a little bit over that. And then for any player that's played at least 10 years in the league, vet minimum going to be $300,000, which, again, higher than the supermax figure from last season. There's also a veteran max that slots in a little bit below the supermax. I think that's going to be around $1.1, $1.2 million this year. Dollars are here, Steve. Rookie scale contracts are going to scale up within this. I'm curious about the core designation. Starting in the 2027 season, so not this year, but the year after. The core designation, for those who aren't familiar, that is essentially the WNBA's version of the franchise tag, if you're a football fan listening to this, to where, hey, we slapped this on you if you're eligible for it. It's a 1-year deal at the max. You can negotiate a multi-year deal from there, but it's up to that max figure, whatever it is. But with this new CBA, starting in 2027, only players with 6 or fewer years of service are eligible for the core designation, which sets up some interesting core decisions heading into this offseason. And again, we are still waiting on more details for the expansion draft. So before we get into the key dates and things, Steve, what was your initial reaction to this thing finally getting agreed to? And is there anything in particular that rings loudest about what we know so far?
I mean, my initial reaction was finally. I mean, I think for me and you, we had different approaches when it came to it. For me, there was no possible way that I thought either side would decide to not get this done. There was just too much to be accomplished with this. And I think for me, it was when you see the player reaction and you see a lot of we stood on business over and over again, and you feel the players feeling like they accomplished what they wanted to, with the fact that the W is going to come back uninterrupted, it's a, okay, let's go. And then you kind of think about like the entire history and all of the players that led up to this moment in the ABL, the early W, like everything that built to this kind of crescendo. it kind of is just a lot to process to a degree, but it's like, I'm happy they're happy. I'm happy they got this done. I'm happy they are much closer to what they feel like they should be getting. And we can continue to enjoy this league that has brought so much joy to so many people, that has been so good, and is finally getting what it should be getting to a degree, if that makes sense. So it's just it's a woof. You know what I mean? I was cynical about it, but then it's like, okay, this is finally done. And now it's like, okay, let's figure out some details. But I'm just more than anything happy that the players are happy and proud of the efforts that everyone has put in to get us to this point.
Yeah. Like, I think to the standing on business portion of the program, like, it stressed me out sometimes because it stretched into this and we started getting, hey, we need to have this done by this date or something's going to be affected. Okay, we really need to have it done by this date or it's actually going to be affected. And I was like, okay, they're really standing on this. But, like, I appreciate the fact that the players were not moved by we're going to be making more money anyway. Like, there wasn't this baseline of, okay, the salary is going to go from 1.5 to 5. That's a big jump. We should just be happy that it's jumping that much and we're all going to get paid more, et cetera. They were from the very beginning, even going back to before the official opt-out back in 2024. This stretches over, again, the next year and a half or so of negotiating. They knew very early on, like, we want to hammer the revenue sharing portion of this. We want gross revenue. This is the percentage that we believe we deserve based on what we are doing, what we have done, how much growth we are anticipating based on what the last 2 or 3 years have been in particular. And we are more worried about, like, that structure than, hey, the dollar figure has gotten bigger. Because taking the short-term look of the dollar figure is bigger is where you get 3, 4, 5 years into this deal and you are not making anywhere close to the actual share that you feel like you should be making. And so for them to put their flag in the sand very early on, stick with it, and ultimately get to, as of recent reporting, it should average out to about 20% of revenue across the course of the deal. They started like the high 30s or low 40s. The league was below 15%. They had to come together. There had to be some bending on both sides. But for that to ultimately end at 20% or around that figure, I think that's a job well done. In addition to, you know, super early reporting, the salary cap might go from 1.5 to 5. It might be 6. For it to land at 7, it's like, okay, yeah, they really were able to nail a lot of this. And then even within that, to do so while also saving the housing bit, which I feel like is a really big piece of this new CBA, to where in the first 3 years of the deal, all players can get team-related housing. And then after that third year, players making $500,000 or lower are still eligible for team-based housing. And so that accounts for, like, you know, we get mid-season, what's happening here, we got to add someone on the 10-day or something like that. Making sure that those players were protected was very important to the players, and they were able to get that as well. And so I'm just proud. And as I said up top, I got kind of stressed as we got to, what, December or so, and we are tossing back and forth different offer sheets, and then we had like this 6-week gap. I'm just like, that seems less than ideal. Why is there this silence? What's going on? And then that flowed right into, we got a deadline to hit, and some of the reporting that was coming out about, hey, how are the players feeling about this right now? So I was getting kind of antsy, to your point, Steve. I was like, hey, man, I think they're going to get it done, but this is feeling a little shakier than I would like for them to do. But shout out to them for holding firm the way that they did. And again, we're going to get more details. This has to be officially ratified, but early impressions, I'm just super impressed and proud, and I'm excited for what this season is going to be, Steve. But that also sets up what we are about to go through over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, because the schedule is still pretty condensed.
It's a sprint, baby.
Yeah, it's time for the sprint. And so, again, term sheet of the new CBA, got to be voted on by the players and then the board of governors before it's fully ratified. But assuming that gets done, Steve, between April 1st and 6th, we have the expansion process, which is the teams figuring out, okay, we got to protect X amount of players. I don't know what that number is going to be because this is an expansion draft with 2 teams this year. And on top of it being an expansion draft with 2 teams, if you're not a rookie or you're not Lexi or Kalani Brown, you are a free agent of some sort. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that will complicate some of the protection bits when it comes to the expansion details. So I'm excited to get more details about that over the coming weeks. But between April 1st and April 6th, that's when we will have all the expansion stuff handled. These are our protections. Here's the actual draft, etc. Get that done. April 7th, April 8th, that's when qualifying offers go out for your restricted free agents, reserved free agents, etc. Between April 9th and April 11th, the negotiating period. Let's talk to some folks. Let's sign. Let's get some verbal agreements, etc. Between April 12th and 18th, that's your signing period. Let's make this official. Let's get into this massive free agency period. And in between
in the middle of that period, what do we have? What's going on over here?
The WNBA draft, where we still don't know who the Dallas Wings are going to select with number one. Is it going to be Awa Pham? Is it going to be AZ Flood? Is it going to be Lauren Betts? Like, what is going to happen here? We'll see. That's April 13th. And then April 19th, training camp opens. So you have essentially a three-week window to do the offseason. Now, we are adults in things, so I would imagine there was not radio silence from mid-October to March 20th.
Yeah.
And so, you know, teams are doing their planning as much as they can. We had players in AU, we had players in Unrivaled. Like, I'm sure there have been some conversations about, hey, you want to come here whenever this gets back right? So, like, I don't think it's going to be as hectic as it could be, because human beings talk and competitive human beings plan. But we do have a bit of a sprint coming once April hits. So I'm excited about that. And Steve, I am curious about free agency in particular. What were you about to say?
Well, no, I'm just going to say it gets interesting. Like, I'm not a, you know, hardcore cap person, but which domino is going to affect things the most? Because we could sit here and we can predict kind of a level of chaos, right? And hey, everyone's a free agent. It could be really wide open. The expansion draft changes some of the math there to a degree, because we don't know who's going to get protected. We don't know who these teams are going to select. We don't know who's not going to be an option. And we don't know how that's going to affect what teams may want to do as far as putting things together and who's available as far as who they can add or keep to their team. And so that's where it gets interesting. For me, I'm thinking, like, how many teams are going to just run it back to a degree? Are you going to be able to run it back? Is the raise going to be enough? Are you going short term? Are you adding someone long term? Like, what does the roster construction look like if you have a supermax player versus if, okay, maybe we don't, but we have cap room and we can build XYZ? Which domino hits it first? Like, what's the first move? And so that's where it's like, I'm really intrigued to see what the expansion rules are like. I'm really intrigued to see what the expansion teams are end up being. Mm-hmm. And then we start to move forward from there, because it's like, from my mind, I'm thinking about a team like Golden State, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hey, you want to play over here? We had a good
year. You saw what we did?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about a team like Parks, like, yeah, let's put all this back together. You want to play over here? Like, it could get really interesting. We could also be like, you know what? I like where I'm at. Like, the team we have could be more of an opportunity to make a little bit more. It's just, how does it get put together? Because there are so many times where to put together a team, well, let's sacrifice, right? Like, let's sacrifice. We got to sacrifice to make sure we have all this talent. Does that sacrifice become easier now? Are you able to put together more talent? Are you, how does that come together? Like, that's where my brain is like, I need to see it before I can, like, really dissect it. But it starts with the tempo and the fire. Like, what are these teams? And then who's left and available? And does that change the plans of a franchise? Who they've, like, looking like a season, how you, they haven't just been sitting, not doing anything. Like, they plan A, plan B, plan C, you've been there. So, like, what does that do to what they want to do?
Yeah, like, I think that's where a lot of my excitement comes. And so I'm going to set the expansion portion to the side for a minute and get to the free agency bit, because one of the things you hit on is what I really want to sit with for a minute. And it was, how are players going to absorb, like, the jumps in salary now that it's official? And how does that factor in with team building? Because as I said up top, the rookie minimum is higher than what the highest paid salary slot was last season. That is a massive jump. And so on one hand, I can see, as the great Cali fan has already reported, the Aces are saying, hey, Asia Wilson, you are getting the Supermax. Not only are you the best player in the league and arguably the greatest player of all time already, you have been part of the sacrifice during this run. Asia made a flat $200K last year when she could have made that $249,000 or whatever. Her, Chelsea, Jackie, like, they've been fine. Like, okay, we'll all hover around $200K so we get a role player or two in here and then we kind of build this roster out. And the Aces are like, oh, thank goodness we finally get to pay you $1 million. You deserve it. And also, you deserve it. But to that end, like, I would bet she's getting the Supermax. I would assume Jackie Young is just going to get maxed for the Aces. But, like, within that, because the jumps are so large, are they more willing to say, well, I can say, instead of, let's say it's the vet max for Jackie Young, so around $1.1 million. Is Jackie Young willing to say, actually, I can just take $800,000 since that is like 3 to 4 times more than what I made last year? And then that also helps us build out more of a roster to where we can be an even better version of ourselves. The question I posed to you ahead of the show was like, are players going to focus more on the actual dollar amount and thus it makes it a little bit easier to sacrifice? Or are they going to be more business minded, more, okay, what percentage of the cap was I making last year? If I get that same percentage of the cap under this structure, how much money am I making? If it's the latter, I think team building can get really, really interesting because the numbers, it's going to add up very quickly. And that's where tough decisions are going to be made. If it's just the former, hey, man, and you want to come to Vegas with all these facilities plus Asia? Do you want to come to Phoenix with all these facilities? Plus, we just went to the finals and we building something. You already mentioned the Sparks. You mentioned the Valkyries, the New York Liberty. Like, hey, you want to come out here in this media market and you're in New York and you do all kinds of things off the court. And it gets interesting, Steve.
I dislike speculating, right? Like, whatever choices you want to make in life, get it done. As long as it's not a problem to other people, get it done. It's your life. It could get interesting, and I don't know which way it'll go, right? Like, this is more, I'm good, let's all make more, or this is what I, like, the team building aspect, this is a different level of sacrifice to a degree, like, which team, because one team could shift everything, right? If the Aces put together XYZ, that could knock some dominoes down, or if the Liberty put together XYZ, that can knock some dominoes down, we've seen it, so it's just like, what's the first move that gets made? Like, what if the Wings are like, you know what? Time to make a splash. Would you like to come play? And like, it's just a lot. If you like, your imagination can get going.
Yeah, it gets fun. And I'll say quickly on that front, Steve, and this actually helps me circle back to the core designation piece. Cause as mentioned up top, like the rules are going to change heading into the 2027 season, but that doesn't affect this coming off season. And within that, if we're talking about what domino is going to fall, I think with free agency, this kind of starts with Jonquel Jones to me. Like, I don't think it's too early to say that. Because in a literal sense, like, she cannot be cored. And so with her being ineligible to be cored, and I think some of the conversation around New York, and this is just analyzing the team, to be clear, this is like a sources said type beat. There has always just kind of been this friction about like what the Jonquel Jones usage is going to be. Like Stewie's kind of baked in, Sabrina's baked in, and like the team overall is very good when healthy, of course. But like Jonquel, like how much is she a spacer? How much is she being used as a pick and roll threat? How much is she getting post touches, etc.? There's always been that kind of friction. And so I kind of wonder, like she feels like the person that sets all of this off to me. Cause like I think like Stewie's returning, Sabrina's gonna return. I think the Aces are gonna keep their top three. I think the Sparks are going to keep Kelsey Plum, De'Arica Hamby. We're going to see, of course. But like, that would be my guess head again. Jonquel feels like the real, if there's a superstar that's going to move, she would be the one because of some of that friction. Again, new coaching staff in New York, so it could just be she's just back. So I'm not saying it's just a guarantee. But I think she has the highest likelihood of the star class to move. And the fact that the Liberty literally do not have the core designations at their disposal to use on Jonquel to prevent that, that's where I think it starts, in my opinion.
So we did all this talk for you to just basically say the Liberty are about to be, all right, man, continue on. What else you got?
That's not what I meant.
Unbelievable content from Nekias Duncan right there.
No, I'm just saying.
What else are you curious about?
Well, while we're here, it's also worth noting, as the Atlanta Dream, they wanted to close some games smaller and things last year. So, hey, Bree Jones, also ineligible to be court. Skylar Diggins, also ineligible to be court. Neko Ogunwoke, big part of the negotiations, one might say, also ineligible to be court. So, like, these are big names that can't just move freely. So, again, not saying Jonquel's the only one. That's where my eyes go. But there are some names that can really change hands here. So I'm excited about that. In terms of team building moving forward, one, it is a positive that all the players on rookie scale contracts, like those dollars are just getting, again, they are scaling up. Cam Brink is slated to go from what they expected, $85,000 somewhere in that range this year to around $385,000, $390,000 this year. Like Paige is going to see a big jump. Caitlin's going to see a big jump. Like everyone in those rookie classes are still on rookie scale contracts. Those are jumping up. The other thing that's kind of not necessarily snuck in, because I do think it's a big part of news, is that rookie scale players that produce at super high levels, they are able to level up financially earlier if they make all W teams or if they win MVP. And so as Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, they've already made all W teams. They're going to be eligible for max contracts in the last year of their rookie deals. That could pose some team building, not necessarily problems, but like it's another thing they're going to have. The Wings and the Fever in particular are going to have to navigate moving forward. Aaliyah Boston is eligible for a max now because she made an all-W team. And so for the Fever in particular, Aaliyah's about to get paid, and rightfully so. And I'm really excited about what next season and moving forward is going to be for her. Like, I think she proved she was a top 10 player last year. Like, she can jump to the top five this year. We'll see. But, like, that's going to happen. Caitlin's going to be eligible for money coming up pretty soon. Kelsey Mitchell can be cored. And so if there's any inkling of she wants to go somewhere else, the Fever can do that, even if it's similar to kind of like the Aces where, okay, we're going to core Kelsey Plum and then we're going to trade her. Even if it's just core and then trade, like at least the Fever have that at their disposal when it comes to Kelsey Mitchell. We'll see what those negotiations look like. But I do think like it's cool that rookies can, hey, if I'm an MVP caliber player, if I'm an all W caliber player, I can get to money faster versus having to wait until this deal is out. And so, like, I think that's also a big piece that should be noted here in terms of things we know. But, man, I'm super excited about all of this, Steve. We are about to be in a frenzy as we're, you know, with us, it is whatever's about to happen with the W offseason, expansion, free agency, the draft, et cetera, dovetailing into this push on the NBA side as we get closer to the playoffs. It's about to be fun. It's about to be busy, but this is a good kind of busy to me. I'm very excited to dig into all of this.
Yeah, it's W's back. And we get the season and we get a continuation off of last year. And it's just a, you know, nice to have a little sigh of relief. We don't have to think about that anymore, you know?
Yeah, yes. Can I ask you one more question before we get out of here?
Absolutely.
One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of this, recent reporting that we got yesterday from one of the many outlets that's done a great job of reporting this, between ESPN, the AP, the Front Office Sports, Andy Constable, et cetera. The regular season expected to expand to 52 games by the end of this CBA, Steve. I would assume it's going to be 44 this year, but going to get to 52. Are you excited about the league eventually eclipsing 50? Or do you have any concerns there?
More basketball is great, but I want to see what it looks like. When are you escalating this? What does that look like? I'm intrigued by how they get there more than anything else. Did you have any thoughts about it?
I think the biggest thing for me, like looking at my timeline, the biggest thing was like, oh God, that means we're about to have 7 games on the same day. I'm just like, well, darn, we already got the jokes flying. I think the biggest thing for me on a serious note is similar to what you said, Steve, is like, when do we see the games increase? Because, you know, later this year, we have the World Cup. In 2028, we have the Olympics. And so, like, are they aiming for, like, 2029 to start creeping these games up to where you don't have the break? Or, like, that, I'm just curious about, like, when they want to go. Because I don't think they're going to go from 44 just to 52. I would imagine it's going to be 44 to 48, 48 to 50, and then 50 to 52 whenever they get there. And so I'm just curious, like, when that process starts. Like, I'm not going to be this year. Do you do that next year and then have to worry about, like, the Olympic break the following year? And, like, how does that impact things? Especially as you are continuing to add expansion teams across the life of this deal as well. And so that's where I'm just like, I understand why you are doing that. And to your point, especially as a fan and as an analyst, like more basketball, I'm not going to say no to that. But I am curious to see how exactly they go about doing it and when they go about doing it. So that was the big thing for me.
Other than that,
yeah, it's great news. Excited to dig into more. So thank you, Steve, for rocking with me. And thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. Lots of fun and great in-depth content there. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. You can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20, where you can find the link to, again, his great article on some of the most impactful role players that we have in the league. So check that out. Don't forget to vote. I'm going to send out that tweet so y'all can vote for these teams. Make me sad. I'm sure I'm going to lose, but it's going to be okay. But check that out. Follow us, and we'll be back next week. Enjoy your weekend.